Well, stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be talking to the Director of Development for Dakota Pacific, Jeff Gochnauer, talking about the mixed-use proposed project there at the site of the Tech Park at Kimball Junction and what they plan to present at the Planning Commission meeting tomorrow. Then the program coordinator with Mountain Lands Association of Governments, Jess Bedingfield, with details on the Summit and Wasatch County Small Business Grants. Finally, Recycle Utah Communications Director Eric Moldenar with an update on the Recycling Center's programs, including their 100-mile meal. Stay tuned. Well, taking a look at some local news first, transportation planners for Park City and Summit County have seen ridership figures sink in the last 4 or 5 months, and they're trying to figure out how to plan for the upcoming winter season. KPCW's Rick Bruff reports that was a major topic at the latest meeting of the Joint Transportation Advisory Board meeting.
Meeting on July 29th, the Summit County Council will discuss some further cuts in this year's budget. One of those is for the Snyderville Basin Transit District. According to the staff packet, County Transportation Manager Caroline Rodriguez is recommending a nearly 20% budget cut. Meanwhile, at last week's JTAB meeting, Park City data analyst Robbie Smoot reported that ridership in the Park City Snyderville transit system had decreased from 76 to as much as 81% during the coronavirus outbreak. He said the ridership per hour was quite small and the cost per rider was high, although they also acknowledged that ridership in the April shoulder season is low anyway. Scott Burningham, also from Park City, said that by comparison in the shoulder season of 2019, they saw some 2,000 to 2,500 riders per day. During the summer last year, it climbed closer to 5,000 a day. He said that in the recent shoulder months, ridership was 500 to 600 people per day. And this summer, it's been 1,300 to 1,400 riders a day. Park City Council member Steve Joyce said the city has taken some actions that have not increased bus ridership.
Honestly, at least here in town, we kind of exacerbate that a little bit, that we've made parking free, you know, not only in China Bridge, but on the street. So that just kind of reduces the incentive to take the bus instead of driving a little bit more on top of what everybody else is seeing.
Smoot said he didn't see much indication that they need to increase service this season. At the same time, County Council member Glenn Wright said in a message that the current minimized service could be improved. His colleague Tim Carson read an email from Wright, a Prospector resident who rides the citywide route fairly frequently.
He said, "I rode the citywide route yesterday. While I fully understand the financial reasons for creating that route out of several other routes, the route is worthless for anyone other than someone who has no other means of transit. It's a long, circuitous route with 30-minute frequency. There were few passengers on it on a day with a fair amount of visitors in town."
Wright added that the citywide route is perhaps appropriate for the shoulder seasons, but not for the summer peak. Steve Joyce also said the bus system could be impacted by the recent news that the Trump administration is restricting foreign worker visas, including the J-1s that are a source of employees for the ski resorts. Joyce said those J-1s are also a major component of riders on the buses. He said the resorts may have to hire employees driving their cars from Salt Lake or Heber. Councilmember Tim Henney said the real wild card is if visitors next winter are willing to climb on crowded buses with their skis.
"I do not believe that the people that would normally be riding transit feel safe and comfortable to ride transit. And I don't know how we're going to suss that aspect out and make a trigger point on, you know, when we do dial up the service. Because I know we've talked about dialing up the service and that we have the ability to do that. And there was even an assumption and maybe an expectation that we were going to dial up the service to what would be off season in our peak season. Well, here we are in peak season. So, you know, is that something we should be considering? Or to Robbie's point, the data, you know, the ridership data isn't showing demand. But to Glenn's point, if the service was there, would people opt for transit?"
One sign of hope is that aid from the Federal CARES Act will be allocated by UDOT. But when that funding comes and how much is not known. Rodriguez recommended they implement cutbacks and they can then restore services if the CARES money comes through. City and county officials generally agreed they have to make some decisions by the end of September and directed their staffers to come back with options. And finally, County Manager Tom Fisher talked about the dilemma he wants to avoid.
There's always the question what we can afford, and then, you know, the CARES Act money comes into that. But, you know, I really hate to have a lot of service out there, too, that's not carrying anybody. And that's the wild card.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. For KPCW, I'm Rick Broth.
8:14 now. Good morning. Well, a study was conducted to explore the expansion of public transportation options in Wasatch County. The Heber City Council reviewed the findings and determined that although there is a need, now is not the time. KPCW's Sean Higgins has details.
The proposed public transit expansion would include improved local service in Heber and Midway, daily Heber to Park City bus routes, Heber to Utah County commuter lines, as well as vanpool services based on demand. If Wasatch County were to implement all of the proposed transportation expansions, yearly costs are estimated to be in the neighborhood of $1.5 million and would serve an estimated 250,000 riders annually, according to the study. Despite a need for more public transit options in the Heber Valley that has only grown in recent years, Heber City Council ultimately decided to hold off on implementing any new transportation projects until life returns to a more pre-COVID-19 level of normalcy. Heber City Mayor Colleen Potter says even though it's a no for now, the council is still interested for the future.
The takeaway was, A, right now is not a good time because of COVID. A lot more people are working from home. People who might normally ride a bus probably wouldn't right now because of the proximity and the difficulty of making sure that they're safe. So the first step would likely be a pilot project between Heber City and Park City. And the council's interested in looking at that when the time is right.
The eventual pilot project would establish two morning, one midday, and two evening routes from Heber to Park City in order to gauge rider numbers and determine if a more permanent service is warranted. Park City would supply the buses and drivers, and Heber would kick in about $200,000 to cover operation and maintenance costs. The study says funding for the full project could come from a number of sources, including Federal Transit Administration grants and fares paid by riders. Heber also has the option to implement a number of quarter-cent taxes on things like sales, mass transit, highways, and food to be used to cover the costs of implementing a new transit program. The study estimates annual revenue from one of these quarter-cent taxes to be about $2.2 million. If Heber were to activate all of the taxes, annual revenue would rise to about $11 million. Sean Seeger is the director of planning for the Mountainland Association of Governments and explained these quarter-cent taxes can be put in place administratively by both city and county councils. He says as of right now, Wasatch County has yet to implement any of them countywide, but both Heber and Midway have elements of the taxes in place.
And that's 0.30 of 1% of sales tax on any item that's purchased via within Heber City or Midway City. Summit County, they've implemented all five quarter cent sales taxes. Many of those quarters that can be implemented administratively by the county council themselves, and even your city councils can do some of those quarters.
No official decision was made at Tuesday's council meeting to determine a timetable for an expansion of transportation services in Wasatch County or a pilot program between Heber and Park City. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
This is Mike Strawn, hard goods buyer for Cole Sport, a local KPCW supporter. Summer is upon us and our doors are open at the Park Avenue location with bikes, patio furniture, and last winter's remaining products. Open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. daily, 435-649-4800 or colesport.com. Cole Sport, expect the unexpected.
Well, we're trying to get Jeff Gochnor from Dakota Pacific on the phone. Haven't been able to track him down yet, but we'll put him on as soon as we hear from him. In some other local news, Heber City Council has moved to accept federal relief funding through the CARES Act in order to help with some of the costs associated with the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Heber's shares of the federal CARES Act funding is just shy of $1.5 million. It was determined by the city's population. In order to accept the money, the city must agree to only use the funds to directly respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. The money cannot be used to offset any city revenue shortfalls due to the crisis. The first installment of the aid will be approximately $500,000. Mayor Colleen Potter says that money can go to work immediately.
We had to put some of those plexiglass, you know, separators in the offices where the public comes. One thing that's just come up is our little local theater that brings people to downtown can't do their play indoors, so they're doing it outdoors, and we're going to use just a little bit of money to help them because they have to create a whole new stage and a sound system, and that's an economic development type thing that comes down and brings people down to support local businesses. A lot of PPE for the police, those type of things.
Heber City is expected to anticipate future expenses related to the pandemic through early December, and any unused portion of the city's relief funding will be returned. Despite challenges over the past few months, Mayor Potter says that Heber only experienced 1 month where local sales tax revenue was below 2019 numbers. In addition to offsetting costs directly related to combating the pandemic, the relief money can also be used to help out local businesses. Mayor Potter says tourism-based businesses have been hit the hardest, but some have been able to adapt to the changing landscape and are experiencing a successful summer.
Businesses that mainly tourists come, you know, restaurants, some of those things that in the summer, rentals, places like that where a lot of people typically come from out of the community to support them, and that it's not happening right now. There's some businesses that are doing just fine, but those type businesses that depend a lot on outside revenues are the ones that are struggling the most.
Mayor Potter stressed that the city is still very early in the process of accepting the aid package, and more details about how the funds will be distributed will be forthcoming. 8:21 now. Good morning. Well, Dakota Pacific, the applicant for the redevelopment of the 1.3 million square foot development at the location of the Park City Tech Park at Kimball Junction, returns to the Centerville Basin Planning Commission tomorrow night. On the phone to give us an update, I have the director of development for the project, Jeff Gochnauer. Good morning to you, Jeff.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me on.
So do we have a name for the project yet, or are we still calling it the Park City Tech Park at Kimball Junction?
We're still working on the name, and there's a number of names for it. We just call it the DPRE mixed-use project that we're proposing.
Okay. Give me those initials again.
DPRE. That's the company I work for, Dakota Pacific Real Estate.
Got it. So the basic concept for Dakota Pacific is a mixed-use project, again, about 1.3 million square feet, 1,100 residential units on about 50 acres. It's on the agenda tomorrow for a discussion, not a decision. It's anticipated the item will be continued until the August 11th meeting. So when do you hope for a decision from the Planning Commission?
Well, we, truthfully, the sooner the better. I think if we could have our meeting tomorrow and then a final public hearing on August 11th, I would hope that they would be in a position to take a vote at that time.
Any changes to the plan since the last hearing that was held in late June?
You know, what we heard, we tried to listen to what the public was interested in and the Planning Commission members, and we did hear that our project seemed like it was really focused on the people that would work and reside within the boundaries of our project, that it wasn't focused on the broader community. So we've gone back to the drawing board somewhat, and we are looking now at really creating some spaces that would appeal, as I said, to the broader community. So some of the things that we've been looking at we found some spots for some pocket parks, perhaps a big dog park. We're looking at a place that we could accommodate a community garden. We've got a great plaza that has been there from the start, but we really haven't put a focus on it. But on the plaza, we anticipate that there could be a weekend farmers market. It's a great site for summer night movies, perhaps even a food truck roundup. And so it would be in close proximity to the existing transit center. So people that were coming in, they could come in on transit and not have to even bring their cars and easily walk to this area. So we've tried to put sort of a focus on a public gathering intersection that we think would be attractive to the citizens of Summit County.
And some of your critics, including two of the Summit County commissioners who approved the Boyer Tech Park originally, say this will accelerate growth. One critic saying the project is appropriate for an expanding urban area, certainly not the Snyderville Basin. And I know you've addressed this before, but how can this project have 1,100 residential units and not generate more traffic?
Well, that's a really good question. Anything that is done on that site will generate more traffic. So we have certainly a challenge today with the traffic, particularly in those, you know, within those first two lights once you get off on I-80 on 224. But what our project does is, because of the mix of uses, the traffic is not concentrated at any specific time. With respect to the tech park, those workers were coming in the morning and leaving at night. So at peak travel, AM and PM, there was a significant impact on that intersection. In our case, our trips will be spread out over the day. And so it really does. We've done a comparison with the original traffic study for the tech center versus our revised plan or our proposed plan. And at peak traffic, the impact would be 40% less than the tech center plan. So it's significant, although anything we do is going to add traffic. And so that provides the opportunity to bring the stakeholders to the table, UDOT, UTA, county, Park City, whoever wants to be a party to this, and start this discussion on how do we solve this problem now.
So
an interesting thing to consider, we've had conversations the last couple of weeks with Skull Candy, Kodiak Cakes, Backcountry.com. And I would say the average percentage of commuters, of their employees that are commuting in from Salt Lake Valley is 70%. So think if you took those commuters off the road, they had a place that they could live in housing in our project and not have to even get in their car to go to work. That's a significant benefit.
And why not work out the traffic improvements there at Kimball Junction before we go ahead with this project and just add to it?
Well, it's interesting. Part of the issue is getting this this area that's problematic already up on the list of priorities for UDOT. Right now, it's not. It's low on the priority list. And one of the things that they've stated is that they want to see density on transit nodes. And so it's important for them, and here we are on top of a transit center, to see density in that area. That makes them more interested in raising the profile or the priority, if you will, of this project on their list. And until you get it moving up the list, they're not really interested in doing much. So I think we've got some things in the works that are going to help us move up the list. And again, density on transit nodes is a big deal for them.
Whatever happened to the gondola to the Utah Olympic Park?
Really good question. When we decided to focus on just on modifying our application to just focus on the land that we own, not including the county parcel where the Richens building is and where the tech center or the transit center is right now, we took that sort of off the table because we don't control that property, and that would be a big part of the gondola or an expanded transit center. But just because we're focusing on our property, our full objective is to continue looking at how we improve the transit center and even incorporate a gondola in it. We still show right of way within our project that the gondola could travel. So we're not planning that out of possibility. And our objective is to work with county leaders to figure out how to make this transit center more robust, more significant, and more effective in moving people.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about how does Provision 2.3 of the Snyderville Basin Development Code come into play here, which basically requires a compelling public benefit for increased density. What we've got here is basically the same total amount of square footage, even a bit under what was approved, but it just feels like a more dense project given the increase in the residential units by threefold. So is it in play or is it not, Provision 2.3?
My understanding is that it is not in play because we are not asking for an increase in density. But, and you're right, it's a different density. So we have more housing than we do have, tech center employees, but it's just a different use. And from everything that we've been told is that there's not only a significant shortage for affordable levels of housing, but even market rate housing. And so we think that we're providing a need for the county.
The affordable housing, can you tell us what the price point of these units will be on these units? I mean, how affordable will they be?
Well, we affordable housing is measured by an individual or a family's income as a percent of the area median income. So the Summit County 2020 area median income, I think, is just shy of $120,000. And so our housing levels of affordability will start at 30% of the area median income and go all the way up to 120%. So we have a broad range of different levels of affordability. So for instance, at 30% of 120, that means somebody that makes $36,000 a year would be able to qualify for that level of housing. And then 40%, there's a different threshold, 50, 60 and on. But that's how it's calculated. And there's a significant need for those, anything below 80% AMI.
And is there a senior component to any of the housing?
That's another thing that we've heard loud and clear over, particularly in our last hearing, but even prior to that. There's a demand for senior housing, and we're planning to accommodate that. We've had some good conversations with some of the leaders in senior housing in the community, and we're having ongoing dialogues on how best to incorporate that into our project.
The boutique hotel, is this something that's really necessary?
Well, I would just say from input that we've received from those that have looked at our project and they've seen the possibility of a hotel there, they think it's a fabulous idea. It's a different level of hotel that might be in the Junction right now. And so we're confident that there's a demand for it. Obviously, with COVID-19, there aren't really many hotels that are excited to be in business, but we're assuming that those things will be remedied and that it's a great location for a hotel.
All right. And water, where's the water coming for the project?
We have access to water shares that are owned by the previous owner, the Boyer Company, and so we do have water access to provide for the project.
And service will be provided by Summit Water then?
Yes.
All right. And with regard to Park City School District, we're talking about perhaps a number of new students, and this kind of came as a surprise to the school district, which could require even a new school building to accommodate all of the kids. Are you providing any space for a school there? Or?
No, we don't have space per se for a school planned right now. They do, as I understand it, the school district actually owns a parcel of land just south of our project that they acquired early on. So I think they have a parcel of land already that they could utilize if they needed to.
All right. And talk to us, that people can show up tomorrow to comment. The planning, the public hearing, I should say, is the first item on the agenda. What is it that you'd like people to focus on?
Yeah, it's the first item on the agenda. It's a Zoom meeting, and you can find that on, I think if you just go and look for the agendas of the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meetings, you can find how to access the Zoom link. A big part of our presentation, I think in the previous meetings we've had, we've pretty much covered all there is to cover about what we're proposing. But in this meeting tomorrow, you'll see some transition to those community spaces that I addressed earlier.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add?
I think that's it, Leslie. Thank you for allowing me time to visit with you.
You bet. Jeff Gochnauer, again, the Development Director for the Dakota Pacific Project there at Kimball Junction. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Real quickly, also, I just want to note that the we'll be posting the Zoom link to the website here later on, but we've got a continued public hearing. First item on the agenda tomorrow, that meeting starts at 4:30. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Stay tuned. We've got another interview coming up with Mountainlands Association of Government. Well, there's a new source of COVID-19 relief for small businesses in Summit and Wasatch counties. Mountainland Association of Governments has launched the second round of an emergency small business grant program. Joining me to explain who's eligible and how to apply, I have program coordinator Jess Benningfeld. Good morning, Jess.
Good morning.
So, as I mentioned, this is the second round of grants. How many businesses were you able to help in the first round?
We were able to help 94 businesses.
Okay, and how much money was distributed?
A little over $400,000.
All right, and how much do you have for the second round?
About $420,000.
All right, and the money's coming from where?
This money is coming from the state CDBG program, the Community Development Block Grant Program, specifically for small cities, which covers Summit and Wasatch counties, from the U.S. CARES Act.
All right. So do the math for me. I mean, those 94 businesses received, like, how much?
The maximum award we gave out was $5,000. The minimum, I think, was $1,000. This time around, we've managed to bump up the maximum that we're able to give businesses up to $7,500 each.
All right. All right. So what businesses can apply?
So we're specifically focusing on small businesses. So businesses have to be located in Summit and Wasatch County. They have to be able to prove that they've been negatively impacted by COVID-19. They have to have 20 or fewer employees, a current business license, the ability to document or report on the use of these funds if we require it, and they have to be open or plan to reopen in compliance with state and county health orders.
All right. So when we're talking about less than 20 employees, does that include both full and part-time employees?
Yes, that includes all employees on the payroll and business owners.
All right. And what can the money be used for?
Money can be used for rent and utilities. It can cover some payroll costs, some outstanding debt, other immediate operational costs, and cleaning and disinfecting of the facilities.
All right. What if they don't make it? I mean, are they expected to pay back the money, or is it doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter. We're just trying to help businesses get on the right foot. The counties will look at each of the applications and review if it looks like, or if the business owner says, hey, we're just wrapping up business for this organization and then we're going to be out. They may not be awarded the grant funds.
All right. Anything that the money cannot be used for?
If the business is run from a personal residence, they can't use it to pay their mortgage and they can't use the funds to pay tax debt.
Okay. And what about nonprofit organizations? Can they apply?
Not for this grant. The Summit and Wasatch counties are meeting to come up with a nonprofit program that'll probably be announced the first week of September.
All right. And if people are interested, how do they apply?
They can go to mountainland.org under our economic development. They'll find a Summit and Wasatch COVID-19 emergency small business grant webpage where they can access a live application. They can see a video walkthrough of the application and see all of the requirements and eligible uses that are going to be applicable here.
All right. And they need to have an application in by when?
By August 3rd.
Okay. And when will money be available?
I'm hoping to be able to have all of the checks sent out by the first week of September.
Oh, so this is a pretty quick turnaround.
We're trying.
Okay. Will businesses know that their application has been accepted, or they'll just expect to see a check in the mail or direct deposit or something?
Within the next 2 weeks, I'll be sending out emails either asking for additional information or informing businesses whether they were approved or were not accepted for this grant program.
Okay. And applications are open at this point, correct? They just at midnight it opened?
Yeah, they opened at midnight this morning.
Okay. Anything else, Jess, that people should know?
No, we're just super excited to get these funds out and to be able to help as many businesses as possible.
Okay. Jess Bedingfield with Mountainland Association of Government. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, the opening of school season isn't far away. All Utah schools, public and private, will be required to submit their proposals for reopening to the Utah State School Board. As KPCW's Rick Bruff reports, one of those is the Wileman School, located in the Snyderville Basin near Kilby Road.
The new executive director of the Wileman School is Steve Williams. He told KPCW that he accepted the job back in January before he knew the challenges that Wileman and a lot of other schools would be facing.
You know, it's like everything in schools. We take on challenges and we face them with hope and optimism and a good group of people around us, and we move forward.
Williams was one of the faculty who founded the school back in 2010. Before that, he began his career at the Waterford Private School in Salt Lake for 14 years, then taught in Atlanta before coming back to Utah. He's mostly been an English teacher, introducing students to everything from Shakespeare to Tolkien to Agatha Christie. Wileman has about 600 students, K through 8. Williams said they're looking forward to welcoming back the students who left when the school locked down on March 13th.
We're looking forward to their return in August, and knowing that it's going to be a challenge and that we're going to have to do things differently than we've ever done them before. But we're ready. We're hopeful, and we're excited, and we're trying to just approach this with all the energy that we have to make it work well.
Williams said that in reopening, the school administrators, who are also faculty, will try to be as flexible as they can without breaking. They want to offer parents a number of options.
We're offering an in-person sort of traditional classroom where students can come in and be in our classes like they typically are, of course, with increased cleaning protocols and wearing masks and face shields and things like that. But we also know that some of our students are not able to come either because they are, immunocompromised, or they have maybe a family member who is, or they just get sick for some other reason. Maybe it's not even COVID. So we are offering the option any day. They can do it one day a week. They can do it 3 days, 5 days, whatever works for them. They can join classes synchronously through their Chromebooks.
He said they're making the Chromebook laptops available to all their students.
So if a student is not able to come into the school, they will join live classes. We have set up all of our classrooms with a Chromebook that will be sort of trained on what's going on in class, on the teacher, on the board, wherever it needs to be, and students can join that class. We got a lot of practice in the spring with using some of the technology that will help us do that. The Google Classroom and some of the features that it offers to include those students who are at home in a really direct and productive way.
Steve Williams, executive director of the Wileman School. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Well, classes start August 20th for students at Park City Schools. District administration continues work this summer to make schools as safe as possible for the return of students. Building operations will be different with COVID-19 prevention measures. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has details of what faculty and students can expect.
Park City School District started working on the back-to-school plan in March, right after Governor Gary Herbert ordered Utah schools closed due to the coronavirus pandemic. The cleaning and safety measures have been identified, and the district's chief operating officer, Mike Tanner, says they're continuing their work to implement them before the first school bell chimes. He says dealing with the contagiousness of the virus is an exercise in risk management, and they're doing everything recommended by the CDC and State Board of Health. That includes directional hallways, mask usage, distancing, and sanitizing.
And we've done some other really neat things that we've packed our air circulation system as one of our components of this risk management strategy, and inserted advanced filters and ionizers, and we're also increasing the amount of fresh air brought into the schools. And then our sanitation procedures, we've added an extra custodian per building that's going to do nothing but wipe down touch surfaces, clean restrooms, and help with lunch cleanup that ends up being some of the classrooms.
The cleaning products, Tanner says, have been approved by the EPA and FDA and are hydrogen peroxide based.
Two main cleaning agents that we're going to use to both fog the rooms and to clean our touch surfaces are all hydrogen peroxide based. And we'll have those material safety data sheets available for our families to use and post it up on our website.
For kids riding the bus to school, if it is too crowded for 6-foot distancing, they'll have children wearing masks. Their goal is to have no more than 2 children on a seat unless they're a family unit. Drivers will ensure kids are in assigned seats for contact tracing purposes, and they'll have their own N95 masks for extra protection.
And we're going to load the buses from the back to the front, as they are with the airlines now, to reduce children from walking past others and potentially breathing into them. All of our buses are going to be clean when the kids show up in the morning. We'll clean them before the afternoon route starts, after the morning route is done, and then we'll clean them again in the evenings. We'll have hand sanitizer dispensers on all the buses for the kids, and our drivers will have extra masks in case our kids show up without a face covering.
Tanner says most classrooms are about 900 square feet. With 24 kids in a room and an instructor, they'll be able to keep desks 6 feet apart. As KPCW has reported, the district is offering parents an alternative to keep kids home and do classes online. This may reduce class sizes and provide more social distance options.
But we're also prepared to use some of our larger common spaces in the event that we do have a classroom that exceeds that 6-foot capability. We also will have, on a limited basis in some rooms, especially for some of our younger ones, some desktop plexiglass shields that'll help us provide a secondary layer of protection between our kids and each other.
Go to kpcw.org for information and details about school opening procedures. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
8:47 now. Good morning. Well, the Centers for Disease Control reports that 40% of people who have the COVID-19 virus are asymptomatic. The disease is surging in Utah, and Summit County's mask mandate issued earlier this month requires everyone to cover their nose and mouth when in public places. Park City Hospital Medical Director Dr. Wing Province told us that the virus spreads through droplets that are expelled through coughing and sneezing. So he says wearing a mask in public is one critical practice to prevent spreading it to others.
And as you think about how most people who do not have a medical background screen themselves, they think, well, I'm not having symptoms. I'm okay to go to this pool party. I'm okay to go to my neighbor's barbecue. I'm okay to have a get together because I'm not having symptoms. Or so-and-so is coming into town and it's okay to have them over because they're not reporting any symptoms. But if that's the case, and if CDC is saying that up to 40% are positive with COVID but not having any symptoms, then that's worrisome for all of us, medical community or not.
He says keeping track of the various color code alert measures can be confusing and misleading, so it's best to follow the guidelines of the CDC and the World Health Organization experts.
What's easy to keep track of are the very consistent guidelines that the world's experts have guided and given us for the pandemic. So that those are social distancing, wearing a mask. And one of the common myths that I hear is, well, I don't need to stay 6 feet apart from someone else because I have a mask on. And it's not either or, it's doing both. And then the third is hand washing.
COVID-19 has taken on a political context, and with that comes resistance to practicing some of the prevention measures. Dr. Province says that myths about mask wearing are circulating on social media. Early guidelines did state that mask wearing wouldn't protect someone from the virus. However, research shows differently.
Well, there's been a lot of studies that are showing that they are even more safe and more protective than even some of the surgical masks that you can buy, or at least as equal to those. So they are extremely effective at protecting others from your droplets and then protecting you from the droplets of other people.
And he dispels the rumor that wearing a mask can cause illness from inhaling carbon dioxide.
Why have surgeons been wearing masks for decades and they're not passing out? So that is a myth. There's no fact to that. It will not cause you to be dizzy, lightheaded, or getting a headache from too much carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide goes right through the mask. It does not build up in the mask.
And Province says that another common misconception is that if you wear a mask, you can be up close with others and that you'll be protected.
This RNA virus. But that's not necessarily true. There, if you were to YouTube some videos about how far your droplets can go when someone coughs or sneezes, that will scare you to wearing a mask.
And people, he says, should not touch the front of their mask, but rather remove it from behind the ears. He also suggests washing it daily.
This RNA virus that the coronavirus is extremely sensitive and falls right apart when it's water. Just washing without bleach or any kind of special chemical is just fine.
Province says that the N95 high-grade medical mask should be reserved for those healthcare workers on the front lines. Recycle Utah is planning for its annual summer fundraiser, the 100-mile meal, but due to the COVID-19 restrictions, the event will be held a bit differently this year. On the phone with an update from Recycle Utah, I have Communications Director Eric Moldenhauer. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so What would have been the fifth annual 100-mile meal won't be a meal together, but still delicious and local. Tell us what you got planned.
Yeah, so the 100-mile meal is kind of our biggest event of the year, and we always look forward to it, and so do the community members. It's a celebration of, you know, Park City and Summit County's local food, local farmers, local businesses, where every ingredient comes from within a 100-mile radius of the Recycle Utah Center. That's usually held up in Oakley at a private ranch up there. But obviously with COVID-19, we're not going to be having the actual physical event this year. But we are keeping it pretty much the same with just kind of a Recycle Utah twist. So what it's going to be this year is the same concept with everything coming from within 100 miles, but a CSA kind of take-home make-it-yourself meal kit. That's still going to include veggies, greens, ice cream, meat from Bill White, and then they'll all be kind of prepared, ready to pick up or delivered. We have options for that. And then it's going to be kind of cook at home with step-by-step instructions, which is provided by Chef Alex Malmberg from Inupa Park City there, and that's thanks to Epic Promise for their support with that. But it's still the concept of keeping things kind of local, enjoying your food close to home, really fancy, pre-prepared, but just not to the big groups. It'll be more intimate, but we're really excited we can still offer this option.
Okay, so is it going to happen in one night, or do people have choice?
It's going to be a two-day thing, August 14th and 15th. Anyone who orders one of our meal kits, they start, it kind of comes in meals for four, essentially. So some people are doing for eight people, some people are doing for four people. They'll be able to pick it up on Friday the 14th or Saturday, August 15th. We're still TBD on the location of that. It'll be somewhere up at the Park City Mountain Resort. We're just trying to figure that out where, or possibly here at Recycle Utah. But it'll be 2 days to pick up, so that way they have the option to kind of make this meal over that entire weekend whenever they like. Some people are doing it with family. Some are having a couple friends over. But again, it's that same concept and the intimate gathering this time.
All right, what's the cost?
The cost is, $400, and that also comes with, that's the option with the bartender's box from Top Shelf, and that's also the same concept as they are coming up with a creative, unique cocktail recipe that is going to be from one of the local gardens as well. Without the cocktail kit, it's going to be $300, and that's, again, a dinner for four, and that is, and then the biggest part is it's a fundraiser for Recycle Utah, so it helps us out as well.
All right. Tell us then, how many of these can you offer? I mean, could you have more than you would have been able to have at a dinner?
No, we're going to have less this year. Mm-hmm. Right now it's looking about 160 meals total. I guess that's people total. So, meals for, each people there. Normally at the event we have about 200 people there. So it's going to be a little less than years previous. But that's fine. We, are still working with the local farmers. Everyone has been fantastic to work with this year. We're dealing with a lot of the same people we have in the past, Renewy Gardens. Again, Top Shelf is helping out. So it's right on track with, the past 4 years of the event.
All right. So people order online or give the Recycling Center a call?
You can give me a call here. You can give me a call personally. Yeah, I'm here every day, Monday through Friday. Or you can go to recycleutah.org. It has full ordering information there, kind of gives you a full rundown on what exactly is in the CSA box, the different options, the one with the bartender's box or without. But if anybody has any questions, please, like I said, just give me a call personally. I can walk you through it and set you up, but we're looking forward to, you know, selling out. And the tickets have already been selling really quick. We put it up for sale last week, and I think we're already about a quarter of the way full. And, you know, every day I keep having more and more people joining on.
All right, great. Let's see, a virtual discussion on reducing plastic waste will be held at the end of the month. Tell us about this.
Yeah, we're joining with Swanner Eco Center. We did this before kind of all the COVID started early on in the year with an in-person kind of ways to reduce plastic in your life. Swanner's very passionate about it, and obviously so is Recycle Utah, so it's a great great partnership. It's going to be a kind of Zoom webinar on July 30th at 6 p.m., it is free. You do have to sign up for in advance. But the virtual conversation, we're going to be discussing alternatives to plastics, cost-effective solutions, challenges of going plastic-free, but also the importance of it. In our world, there's just plastic associated with everything, but it's amazing how much you can actually cut out of your, you know, everyday and daily lives. And we're going to, you know, kind of show people tips on how to do that, everything from reusable Q-tips to bamboo toothbrushes, obviously reusable bags at the grocery stores, and there's a whole lot more to it than just that. But you can visit SwannerEcoCenter.org to sign up for that, or Recycle Utah will also have a link for it as well.
Certainly, plastic can get recycled, and not a bad idea to reduce it. But styrofoam, that's a different deal. And given all of the takeout that's happening, is there anything we can do with the styrofoam boxes that it's served in?
Unfortunately, not those. The styrofoam containers; those cannot be recycled. We can recycle here at the center. The big EPS box styrofoam that comes, you know, things, TVs that are shipped in there, but not the food ones. Unfortunately, that grade of styrofoam is not recyclable. What we encourage people to do is we have a green business program, and you can find that on our website as well. Encourage people to shop or, you know, purchase dinners or food from those establishments as they don't use styrofoam. Most are using paper to take out, which you can recycle. Or if you are going to a restaurant that still is using styrofoam for their takeout, have a discussion with their managers and see if they'd be willing to kind of change their habits as well. But again, if it's that big block styrofoam, we're one of only two places in the state that can take it. Right here at Recycle Utah, it can't go into your curbside. But the food containers, those unfortunately just have to be thrown out.
All right. Dumpster Day is coming back, but not until the end of September.
Yeah. So a couple months away. The first ones in the spring were a big hit. You know, it's kind of the first, I guess, you could say, community event we were able to have again. You know, it's not too many people at once, but we were seeing a lot of cars coming through. That will be at the end of September. And then the household hazardous waste collection, we weren't able to do our spring one. That's also set for the end of September on the 26th. Both are still kind of obviously in a gray area. We're planning on having them, but things can change, as we all know. What we're encouraging people to do is, you know, it's a couple months away. If you do have things that either need to go to the landfill or if you do have hazardous materials such as paints, oils, gasoline, solvents, things of that nature, they have a program that runs 6 days a week all year round. And the Summit County Landfill is only about 15 minutes away over by Rockport Reservoir there in Wanship, and it's a great program for Summit County residents to use. Instead of just waiting for that kind of one weekend a year to be able to come to Recycle Utah, or, you know, when we have the hazardous waste collection over at the Canyons parking lot. So we encourage people to, you know, use that option. The hazardous waste is free over there, and it's a very minimal fee for dropping anything else off if you need to take it to the landfill.
Right. So you're just waiting for confirmation then from whom?
I mean, it'll be county, you know, working with the hazardous waste programs, and obviously, you know, in city limits here with the dumpster days. Still planning on it. Again, just like you said, things can change, but we always like to encourage people to use that option just year-round instead of waiting for, you know, one weekend a year. But again, don't see any hiccups. We still see it happening, but we're just kind of giving people a heads up just in case it doesn't.
All right, you were closed Friday for the July 24th holiday, but word is that you're as busy as ever, huh?
Yeah, we Saturday was very busy, and so was yesterday. People were catching up. It's kind of amazing if we do close, you know, for one day, which we only close 6 days a year, which is the pretty amazing part, playing a lot of catch-up there. We're still seeing over 400 cars per day. With the limited parking spaces of, you know, five right now, just because we're spacing people out. There's, you know, usually a line out front, but people have been great about not idling, coming ready to, you know, have their items sorted. Our operations team is busting their tail out front to kind of help people, you know, show them where everything's going. Myself and Carolyn, the executive director, we run out front and we'll help people unload their cars when it does get to a busy point. But we're just kind of encouraging people that before they get to the center, just to separate and sort your items so it's quick and easy for you. You don't have to spend too much time here. Not that we don't want to see everyone, but it helps that kind of line of cars get through quicker, and it'll help you as well.
All right. Thanks, Eric. Eric Moldauer is the communications director for Recycle Utah.